just going to give you a heads up right now. I have all the sads. Still not over the DC United loss. I'm stunned. I'm shocked. But I'm a professional, so I'm pulling it together to bring you this episode of Pitch Pass.
Houston, Dyna, Portland, Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Pitch Pass.
This is our
world. Toronto, FC, Real Salt Lake.
This is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire.
This is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC, Dallas, or Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Hello, welcome to the latest edition of Pitch Pass. You know, we're available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, the iHeartRadio app, Google Play. There's really no reason why you can't subscribe to Pitch Pass to get your MLS goodness. And yes, we are starting to expand the scope now that DC United is out of the playoffs. Although, even though I'm sad, I do want to bring in someone who makes me happy. He's an Atlanta United legend. He's a DC United legend. He is a Houston Dynamo legend. He is Bobby Boswell. He joins us right now. Although, hang on, Bobby. I just want to say, let's get this out of the way first, because I've been burned on the last few episodes of Pitch Pass. I know you've got a couple other things going on this evening, and I hope they're not media-related, because we've had people on the show who have come on the show, Sebastian Salazar, and then, like, broken news right afterwards. So whatever it is you got lined up after your conversation with me, it has nothing to do with soccer and media. You're not going to break any news when we're done, correct?
Yeah, I don't have the breaking news will be like my daughter crapped on the kitchen floor, or there will be no other news that I know of. If it's breaking, it'll have nothing to do with soccer, it'll be for sure.
Okay, just making sure. Although, you know what, I shouldn't be surprised. It does seem like you have been replaced in MLSsoccer.com's mind by Dax McCarty, because I feel like he's the one doing all the stuff and you're tweeting.
Yeah, I mean, they talk to you about how quickly they forget about you. And, you know, between that and me wanting to be paid on time, the last time I appeared for them, I'm not sure I'll be getting another call from them. But that's okay.
All right.
You know, that it was fun. It was better to have loved and lost than to have never loved it all.
Wow, that's so zen of you. And we welcoming in Bobby Boswell, if you didn't realize, officially. Bobby, and I know you get confused because I change the name of this podcast every other week. You are appearing on the Pitch Pass podcast and not the other podcast that you appeared on the times before this.
Hey, listen, I'm just here for you, you know, and you can change the name, but okay. I know your true colors. You're a good guy deep down inside, regardless to what all the fans and the people that aren't fans say about you.
When
you're not around and when you are around, I'm here for you.
What?
Greg Gregory.
Thank you for using the rebrand. Bobby Boswell, of course, is an MLS soccer analyst and also a financial analyst as well. It's good that you used your post-retirement career to kind of – you have two careers – and you've parlayed them both into the same title, so we could just call you analyst Bobby Boswell.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there would be people on both sides that disagree with you on those. And you know, like I said, I'm just here for you, and I'll do the best I can. I'll call it like I see it. Soccer, my opinion is always right, so that's really all that matters.
Let me ask you a question about your other job first. First, did you get your Series 7?
I do have that, yes.
Okay.
I was more nervous to take that exam than any game I ever played in.
Well, like, how about more nervous than, like, the combine? Because the combine kind of, like, was the deciding factor whether you were going to have this career or not, which is a lot like the Series 7 that you took. So were you more nervous at the combine or taking the Series 7?
I'm going to go with the Series 7 just because the combine, you know, I'm sure many people know the story, but my college coach was shocked that no one from my college got invited and made us sit in a room when he called the South Carolina coach to ask why no one on his team got invited. And against the South Carolina's coach's wishes to take the phone onto a personal call, he told our coach that he didn't submit any names for any of our players to be invited to the combine. So I didn't partake in the combine.
Why did the South Carolina coach have a say in your college's combine participants?
Well, that would be something to take up with college soccer. Those people seem to have it all figured out, so that would probably be a better conversation. But they have a board, I think, and those guys, you know, it's like 13 coaches or some obscure number that get to vote just because everybody's coach thinks they're the best player, and
true,
it's the other coaches that get to decide.
Okay, fair enough. You know, before we get into the nuts and bolts of second leg of MLS Cup playoffs, I want to ask you, somebody who has recently retired, a couple of players have announced retirement in the last week or so that have been kind of surprising, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Specifically, Brandon Vincent. Now, I know you probably don't know anything about the insider part of why he retired, but I think the surprising thing, and one that you and I have discussed a number of times, is this is one of those careers where it is not a well-paying career, especially at the beginning of your career. I mean, we didn't get to the DP status, TAM-level defender that you were at the end of your career. I'm talking about back when you were 21, 22, 23, 27, 28, 29. It's one of those things where it's not as hard to walk away from soccer as most people would think it is, being a professional soccer player. What were your thoughts as you saw another guy who was in the U.S. men's national team discussion kind of say, you know what, there's some other things that I can do that I probably make a little more money on, so I'm just going to go do those things now?
I think I know we're talking about Brandon, but Luke Michu, you know, he played for DC United.
Yep.
He was my roommate on the road a lot. He looked at where my life was, and he kind of got to see the end of me trying to figure out, am I going to get another contract? I'm trying to do continuing education. What am I going to do when I'm done? I have 3 children, a wife. Real life problems, as most people would say. And I think guys look at that and you're exposed to that as a young player. You get to see that, and there's no, you know, the league spits you out, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not just our sport in general. Sports spit you out into the real world, and we don't make millions of dollars. So it's not like I could just sit around. And not necessarily that I didn't have money. It was more of insurance for my family and healthcare and things like that. So Luke looked at my life and said, you know, I think you've achieved more than I would achieve in this game. I'm okay with what I've done. I've maximized myself. I don't want to be in your position when I'm 30, you know, 33, 34, 35 years old. So I'm going to step away. I think Brandon probably, he has the Stanford card. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it probably means he's a smart guy. He has other opportunities. He probably doesn't love the amount of pressure that's put on him versus, you know, just getting a normal job and not having that pressure. And it, you know, the ceiling is pretty capped in MLS. Once you're signed, you know, that's probably what you're going to make, and not too far above it or below it for an extended period. And I think he said, you know what, I think I can go and start something now at a younger age and build my way up. And, you know, I don't know that for sure, but I have definitely had guys tell me that they're quitting or stopping because they would rather get the second phase of their working career started sooner. So they're not 35 years old like I am, kind of at a junior at a new place, but you know, they don't have 3 kids and a wife and all these other things going on. You know, they have a little bit more ability to stay late and work harder, if that makes sense.
Any truth to the rumor that Nathan Fillion's role in the new ABC sitcom or drama The Rookie is based on the life of Bobby Boswell?
Listen, Rookie was never something that I don't like to think about. Rookie, because that was when I set the MLS own goal scoring record. So, you know, I would never attribute my name to the rookie status, especially back when I was, you know, my first rookie contract was that whopping $11,500 a year.
Bobby, I was talking about the show. I don't know. You obviously are working so hard as an analyst that you don't have time.
I know what you're talking about. I wanted to remind people how much money I made when I joined the league. And I said I played for the love of the game.
Also, you wanted to remind people of your record. Reference. Your record was also a good. It was a good way to remind people of that.
Self-deprecating. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm very calculated here, Gregory.
Let me ask you this. You, how do we? Cause you were when you were a part of the union. Are you union forever? Is that how it works? Like, I know you don't go to the meetings anymore, but you're always kind of in the union, correct?
Au contraire, uh-oh, I get to go to the meetings still.
Oh, like a legacy?
They bring in former players to either talk to the rookies and or also to come in and talk to guys about post-retirement and you know what they could be doing. So I actually got an email today. I haven't opened it yet because that's how I roll. But I think it has to do with the rookie symposium coming up. Can you imagine that? A 35-year-old me trying to tell 16 and 18-year-old kids what they should do with their lives?
Well, I like that idea. You could tell them about what it's like to live in Southeast D.C. as a white guy when that actually meant something, Bobby.
Well, you don't have to go labeling me here, but it was Northeast.
Oh, Northeast. Oh, that meant something, too.
Yeah. That's you know, you always know it's good when you do the appearances for the kids and they're asking, what kind of car you drive, how big your house is. And you say, I live in Northeast. You go, wait a minute. Why do you live in Northeast? That doesn't make any sense. And, I say I'm a man of the people. I'm out here with you guys, too.
I'm living amongst you. I'm just like you.
So, yeah, although they have a Whole Foods there now. So
that's what I'm saying.
Now you say it. And Now you say it, and you're like a yuppie or a millennial, or not even that. You know, you're just a whole new category of person.
That's what I mean. Back when it meant something, you were living there. It was nice. You got cred.
Yeah, those were the glory days.
They really were. They really were. So, all right, since you are still active in the union, is this something that needs to be addressed in the next CBA? And by that, I mean, how do we keep our young players invested in continuing along with their careers as soccer players?
Listen, you can't look at the one. I said the same thing when guys decide to play for another country. You know, you could focus on the guys that said no, and you know, maybe the reasons they said no are important. But there's plenty of guys that want to be involved. And, you know, for me, I don't know Brandon. I don't know the story. But I think that I think he'll look back and regret his decision regardless of what happens. And you know, that's okay. It's his path and it's his life. But I think, you know, that you get to play this sport for so long. I think I have juice to play. And I regret that I'm out there, but it wasn't my decision to not be out there. It was, no GMs wanted to give me a shot at it, and I was priced too high just being as old as I am. And I get that, but I just think when I look back, still, there's plenty of life left to be lived to make money and something else. But there, you know, you only have a certain time span to play these sports, and I think you should take advantage of that because it definitely is a different lifestyle outside of the game. I think he'll regret it. So I don't think they need to spend too much time on it. Obviously, if he was making, you know, people say, well, if he's making all this money, but you look at these guys in the NFL this year that are retiring at halftime and making decisions to retire. I don't think you can really put a price on. Some guys don't want to deal with the pressure. Some guys, for whatever reason, have their own thing going on, and that's their thing. So I don't think you can address it as a union and say, well, what did we do wrong to lose Brandon here or Taylor Kemp or any of these guys? It's just those are decisions these guys made, and more power to them for making it.
In your opinion, what does need to be on the table as a discussion point for the next CBA from the union perspective?
I think that they're going to have a real problem. The quality of the play has gone up, but I'm curious to see what they do with this new added TAM for foreign acquisitions. And, you know, you'll really see it this offseason with guys retiring or not having an opportunity. They're going to they're going to turn the MLS into more of a foreign-based league, which is fine. I'm okay with that. I'm all for the best players getting the opportunity to play. But I think GMs, I think there's a lot of them that don't necessarily know what they're doing, and they're just spending money because it's there to spend, and they don't want to have their fan bases saying, oh, how come we aren't spending our money? And it's going to run a lot of players that know how to win games and are veterans out of the league. And I think it's going to keep a lot of young guys, young Americans from playing that maybe deserve a chance because they're spending a lot of money and bringing someone in just for the sake of doing it. So I think they need to address how much or how many guys they can bring in. You know, their teams are able to turn a green card around in less than a year. So, there's rules. People say, oh, there's rules against that already, but that's not true because they're able to give guys green cards and the rosters are becoming more and more foreign and there's less and less American players, you know, getting opportunities to play. And I think that'll help the USL out, which I think you're starting to see some rapid growth in that. You know, people are following it. They're more interested in it. And I think that's because they're also following, they actually know more of the players because these are players that bounced out of MLS. And, for whatever reason, I think that they have to be careful that you don't grow the league so fast and try to get so many foreign guys that you kind of dilute the talent pool and you ruin the American talent pool, which has happened in so many other countries around the world. So as an American, that's what I like to see. As an MLS guy, I think if, you know, you're not good enough to make the team, you know, who cares where the other guy's from? So I'm kind of torn on it, but I think that is going to be an issue.
Free agent movement. Is it an issue to get that happening a bit sooner or have the restrictions of free agency a little more loosened or lax?
Yeah, I think that I'm not too, you know, I don't speak for the union. I haven't been on a call this year, you know, nor should I have been, but I think I'm not sure what direction they're head. You know, I'm always a big fan of player compensation and bringing the bottom up and if you give a budget increase, making sure that it doesn't go to, you know, the one or two guys that are already making all the money on top, make sure it goes to the whole squad. I think if you're asking young guys to be committed, back in the day, you had to worry about, you know, how are you going to, you know, coaching on the side and doing all this other stuff. It wasn't about improving as a player as much, whereas now guys are able to have their own apartments and be professional and have some money to go around and live their life and not worry about coaching and doing all these other little side hustles. So I'm a big fan of just increasing the bottom part of the salary. You bring that up so, you know, everyone does a little bit better.
In your experience, how invested have the foreign players been in the union and taking a role in the union or seeing the gains that players who American players who kind of need them the most, making sure that they get those gains?
I don't think they care that much, to be honest, and it's not their MO. A lot of them think they don't know how long they're going to be here. They don't want to be here for very long. They're in here to play games, get money, win. But they're not really invested in it. They don't really understand it because it's very different than most anything they've ever been around. You know, very few have been engaged, and the ones that do are usually gone pretty quickly anyway. So the foreign guys, that's what I mean. The union is, I used to keep statistics on it, but it was always like 98% older American defenders. I think the last one I went to, where there were four forwards, and it was like the guys that were there were just mainly there to go to Vegas, not really contribute too much. But, you know, it's the foreign aspect. It's not those guys' fault. You know, they're here to get paid and play and help the teams win. They're, you know, they look at when they look at being hindered by the league, and they don't look at it as like, oh, let me help the union change that. They're just like, well, as soon as I'm out of here. And that's kind of how they feel, and that's kind of how they act.
All right, so last thing, and this is as an outsider who is just observing the league. Obviously, you brought up salaries and bringing up the bottom. What about charter flights? Is that a luxury issue, or is that an issue that the union should be taking a harder stand on?
So my last understanding of it was that there were teams that were willing and able to do more charter flights, and you know, some teams willing to do the whole thing as charter flights, and there were owners that were, you know, they were limiting how many flights you could take. Because you know, they made it mandatory that every team had to take a certain number, but it was, you know, with the addition of free agency, some of the owners fear that if other places are treated so well, everyone will just go to those teams, and that's the whole reason you want free agency, is so that every, you know, owners get their act together. And but it's, I always say, it's, I'm not an owner, I don't have. I never bought a soccer team and tried to lead it and things like that. So it's very nearsighted, or it's not fair, I think, for random people that have never, you know, some people don't even own they don't own a house or bar or anything in their lives. And they're telling an owner how he should be spending his money and what he's doing. But charter flights for me are not a no issue, because everyone's used to riding on an airplane. It's not that big a deal, in my opinion. I think that's just more of a luxury. Oh, it'd be sweet to say we rode on a charter plane. Guys take selfies like they're in a rap video or something. But at the end of it, if you offered every guy on that team, hey, you can ride Southwest, you know, and we'll give you the money that we would spend on that charter flight to split up, or you can ride on the charter flight. Everybody on that plane, everyone on that team would take the money. You know, that there's lesser issues, or greater issues rather, than worrying about charter flights.
You have never sounded more 35 years old than when you said taking selfies like they're in a rap video.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I felt about it. I tried it out. probably won't use it again, but you know, it's on record, and I'm going to stick with it for now.
Fantastic. I love it. And thank you, as always, for your candor in this issue. And with the CBA coming up in the next year, I think it's definitely going to be something I'm going to want to circle back with you at some point over the next year. I do want to get your thoughts before we break down the playoffs quickly on the player awards, as the end of the season awards are starting to be announced. I mean, I'm not going to call you out and say if you agree with choices or not. I will ask you, three things go into the choice: player votes, media votes, and fan votes. Which of those three, and I think I know where you're going to lean, but which of those three should we take more stock of or in?
Player votes.
Yeah, figured. But tell me why.
I would say, but not too heavily, because there are some knuckleheads on every team that don't watch any games. You know, even though that's they're getting paid to know their opponent. But you know, for me, you know, I lost the Defender of the Year one year when everyone voted for me, except the player pool voted for Chad Marshall. And I think that was a more accurate thing for me. You know, I think that he's able to do his job and still be somewhat likable. Whereas, you know, I would have to, you know, play kind of dirty, and, you know, I wasn't a very likable guy. Maybe I'd like to think guys on my team liked me, but I don't think a lot of people rated me very well and show well in a lot of games. And you know, I think there's some weight to that. It's like when I watch certain players around the league, there's guys that are on winning teams that I don't think are very good. They've always been on winning teams. So there's some weight to that, but I still don't think they're very good players. And there's guys that are on bad teams that I think are very good players. And it's just, you know, I think guys are rewarding people that play well in every game. And that's, there's something to be said for that. And I think that the fans and the GMs and the staffs, they also watch a ton of soccer. So there's some weight in that as well. But as a player, you know, you are judged by your peers, and I'm okay with that.
So the Stephen versus Fry debate is the one that's the hot topic. Stephen got the vast majority of the player vote and thus propelling him to goalkeeper of the year when almost everybody outside of Columbus would say Stephen Fry had the best year through the eye test and statistically. How does something like that happen from the player's perspective as people who play against these guys?
Well, I don't know. You probably asked me this because you've seen how I've been critical of Stephen Fry on my Twitter page. But I think that you look at the players around those guys and you say, for me as a defender, I'm very critical on center backs, very critical on goalies, I'm very critical on central midfielders, holding midfielders, number sixes and number eights. And I think that Fry doesn't save a lot of balls that he shouldn't save, he saves a lot of balls that he should save. And he faces a lot of shots that are very predictable. And he does what he's being asked to do, which that's very important. But there's a lot of other goalies around the league that are facing shots that, they're making these incredible, I call them Nick Raimondo-esque saves, where you're like, how did he do that? He shouldn't do that. And they do it on a regular basis. The surrounding cast is not making it predictable for them, and they're kind of standing on their head, kind of like Bill Hamid did in a lot of the years I played with him. So for me, I didn't think Stephen Fry should win that goalkeeper of the year. He wasn't in my top three or four. And Chad Marshall, for instance, was. Chad Marshall, I thought, should have gotten Defender of the Year. I'm okay with one of the Red Bull guys getting it. I would have liked Tim Parker to get it just because I felt like he came from Vancouver and they're out of the playoffs, didn't do well. Goes to the Red Bulls. They were very good. But, I think Stephen, I'm okay with him getting it because I think he's an incredible shot blocker. And I think that he kept his team in a lot of games with a defense that maybe isn't very reliable all the time. And he kept them, they are where they are because of him. I think if you put another goalie in that goal in Seattle, they're still where they're at because of the people in front of Stephen Fry.
Nick Raimondo never winning a goalkeeper of the year, which I think should let you know that this is just a for fun conversation and not something that you should put stock in.
Yeah, I mean,
unless of course you have, and you can speak on this better than anybody, unless of course you have a clause in your contract that says you get X amount of money if you win Defender of the Year, in which case I'm a little pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of ridiculous. It's the awards are kind of crazy. I mean, it's you obviously want to get them when you're playing, and but. People don't. There's so much that goes into it, and we don't have the time to go through it all. But Nick is the fact that Nick is still playing, and his resume will speak for itself. At the end of it all, I think he'll take that over 1 or 2 years of winning the goalkeeper of the year. I mean, the fact that he hasn't won it is actually what puts him in the category in that conversation just as much, because it's almost kind of like a ridiculous thing that he hasn't. But with that being said, it goes back to the people that are voting have an idea of, what they want. And Nick doesn't fit that traditional mold of maybe what they wanted or of any era, what a goalie should be. And, that might have been what hurt him. But he doesn't care. He's going to keep playing and keep doing what he does.
You mentioned your social media, at Bobby Boswell, to follow Bobby on Twitter. As you heard, he's the master of the hot takes on Twitter. Got plenty of them. One that I would like to ask you about specifically, as we just do briefly a little overview on leg two of the MLS Cup playoffs coming up in a couple of days. You said very... very vaguely and very mysteriously, lower seeded teams have an advantage in the playoffs. Good night, y'all. So let's take your Southern out for a second and ask you, what did you mean by the lower seeds kind of have an advantage in these two-legged playoffs?
Well, I will say this. I asked two different people before I posted that what their idea of lower seeds is, because some people think lower seeds would mean, like, what's your take on lower seeds? And I realize that this is a tweet that's out there in the world, and that I'm asking you to explain to me what you interpreted it as.
Yeah, but well, that's the thing. You were very vague, so it could have been read a lot of ways. So to me, the lower seed.
Yeah,
is,
the people that I realized after I posted it, and the people were saying, like, they're throwing factual things, or this says this and this says that. And for me, all it meant was, and I had a long night of tweeting. I was just done with it. But my
were you
point,
okay? Have you recovered yet?
I'm good. My point is that if the team that plays the home game first, in my opinion, has an advantage. So maybe that's, and I call it the lower seed. Some might call that the higher seed. I just think if you play your two-leg series, you have the advantage if you play the home game first. That's it. That's the whole point. That's the whole basis on that. I based that on my play experience and what I've seen over the last few years with this new system.
So why is it then that you feel that the team who has the home leg first has a bit of an advantage?
Yeah, I think that for me, when you play the home game first in front of your home crowd, you know, you go out and you know that you're going to have to go on the road. So you think, we need to go get a result today. Whereas the other team is thinking, don't let this get out of hand. Don't get any stupid cards. They play more passively. And if you go out and you kick butt and you do well, then it puts all the pressure on the other team going home. And then even if you don't do well, you tie or you lose by a goal or something, you can go back, you know, going to the next game. Okay, we have to go do X, Y, and Z. For me, it's just a huge advantage to know in the second leg, you know, if you go take care of business in the first, the second leg is basically the other team's to lose. And regardless, you know, the first leg, I don't know. It's just, for me, it's just more about playing in front of your fans and a free open game versus a team that's being very passive and being told, don't let this get out of hand. Don't get any stupid cards. You know, you're going to play when your fans are jumping and moving around and you get all pumped up in those hard times. The advantage is yours to go and get the result and kind of end it in the first round if you can. I mean, I'm a big fan of playing at home. The teams that I did the best with, we always were the away team on the second leg. So we always played at home first.
And it's hard to really break down the games based on that theory. I think, by the way, I think your theory is a sound one. I don't know how much it applies to this. And you tweeted that stuff out, like, during the matches. So this isn't one of those things where you knew what the results were and then came through. The results of last week didn't play into that. Portland beating Seattle 2-1, going to Seattle, but Seattle losing two players, but one for sure in Marshall and Rodon being questionable and then having to come back on Thursday doesn't really play into that theory. RSL tying with Sporting 1-1 in Salt Lake City, also not one of those situations. Atlanta winning on the road against NYCFC, and then Columbus beating New York Red Bulls at home. None of those games kind of match up with that question, but I still thought it was an important question to ask. So now I will ask you about the game specifically. Which one of these matchups is the one that is most likely to be kind of turned around, if any?
I think the Red Bulls have a very good chance. I think Kansas City's in a good spot. I think Atlanta's in a great spot. I think, you know, the Portland one is a bit of a question, a head scratcher for me. The difference is all these teams know what they have to do going into this next round. So I understand that this time around, it didn't seem like, you know, you're looking at half the picks now, but once you see, you know, I think it'll be more indicative of after these games what it is, because these teams are going to go out and the role is defined. Like Salt Lake is winning that game, they give up a goal late, but if they go 1-0 there, now all they have to do is go on the road and score a goal. But you know, they're pretty close to getting the job done. I don't know. I'm sticking with that. I think there's still more legs to be played. I think Atlanta playing at home against New York Red Bulls or whoever they're going to play if they get out, I think that's a big advantage for them to play at the Bend and then go on the road because they're a great road team. So, same with Kansas City, but they're the other way around. So it's like they just have to go on the road and get any kind of result and then bring it home, play in front of their fans. So it's my opinion, and I think you look at the first round, the play-in games. I know it's not a two-leg series, but three of the four teams that played on the road lost, and they were lower seeds. And that's my logic there. It's because usually those lower seed teams are hot. They forget how to lose. They're riding the momentum. The other teams get scared. I don't know. It's like I've been on Supporter Shield teams that get eliminated in the first round, and I've been on sixth place teams that go to the finals. So it's just, there's something about the mentality of, hey, we got this, could be our last game or our last home game. Like, just go out and get the job done. And it's amazing when it happens. And a way to do it as opposed to, hey, let's get through this series and then we're going to see who we play. Or, the message is different when you're a 1-2 seed versus a 4-5-6 seed.
Is your theory about the going for it in that first game, is that kind of play into why the knockout round matches felt like they were much more exciting and there was much more of a bigger sense of urgency than there was in the first leg of the two-leg series that came right after?
Yeah, the two-leg stuff is always going to be, these next games I think will be a lot more exciting because everything's on the table now. We know. Whereas the first round, people aren't tackling. I mean, well, I'd say they aren't tackling that. The New York NYCFC Atlanta game was a bloodbath.
Yeah. But,
I think it's more of a tactical battle, and it's you don't want to be the one that makes a mistake. And so the games are ugly, and that's how you should be, though. You don't want to, if you don't make any mistakes, you don't give up any goals, you got a pretty good chance of going through. So I think that with the first game, it was more of a, let's go out and set the tone and get it done. We have to win tonight. Let's go for it. Cause who cares about the next game if we're not in the next game? Whereas a two-leg series, there's another game coming. So you are, for some reason or another, a bit complacent. And that's why I say, if you're playing at home, your fans push you through that. You don't want to play for a draw at home on your last game of the year, so you go out and you try to win the dang thing. That's why some teams, I think, do better than that when they play that first game at home.
Well, it's no secret that you're an Atlanta United legend. You mentioned the match versus NYCFC. Was that just a matter of, let's just survive this postage stamp pitch and get back to MB Stadium and we can do our thing there? We'll get Miguel 45 minutes. We'll get him a week rest and hopefully get him to 60, maybe even 90-minute fit. And we'll show what we can do the second leg. First leg, survive. And then they pinch a goal. And now we're just playing gravy and we're rolling in free for the second leg.
I think that there's so much pressure on Atlanta. Just it's created by their fans and their staff and the coaching staff. I think that there's never going to be an easy game for them just because, as an opposing, I played against them before I got traded there. And it was like, people are sick of the hype, and then once you're there, there's a lot of hype, but it's not necessarily good hype. I mean, it is good hype, but it's pressure and it's a lot of pressure. So for Atlanta, they're playing a NYCFC team who can be as good as anybody on any given day, and they have the talent as well. And I think they were more angry about, having to play this Atlanta team that's getting all this credit. And so it was a bit of a nasty game and a kind of we're not going to be pushed around by anybody. And I thought Atlanta should have scored more. And I think that hopefully doesn't come back to bite them. But, NYCFC's, they've gone on the road and gotten good results. And I do think Atlanta will come out of this, but there's no easy games for Atlanta. There's nothing easy peasy about it because they're going to get every team's best game. No one wants to be embarrassed. And, all the teams that are ahead of them now are very dangerous you know, in that NYCFC, or they're playing a team that eliminated them, or a New York Red Bulls team that's just given them fits, you know, fits of a problem. And, you know, I hope they do well. I really enjoy watching them play. I like the way they do things as an organization, and I like a lot of those guys that are still there. But they definitely, I feel pressure for them, and you can see it. You can see it when they play. It's like, why are they so on edge all the time? And it's just because they have such high expectations that are thrust upon them, and they're just trying to meet those.
Okay, and this will be the last thing, and I thank you for being so generous with your time. Although I will ask you in this answer to not use the kind of language that you used in that answer. Easy peasy. I don't think, I mean, you're better than that. We don't need to go. We don't need to work blue. All right? So.
Okay, yep.
Okay. You brought up something that I had never considered, and if you play for Atlanta United, it's all roses and sunshine. Huge 70,000 people, everybody in the city treating you like you are, you know, a major American sports star. Everybody loving you, kind of giving you some free passes on some stuff. You saying that there's pressure and it's not all good pressure on Atlanta United players was a bit of a surprise for me. I know you touched on it a little bit there, but in your rest of your answer, but can you expound on that a little more and why that isn't always a great thing to be the toast of the town?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody wants that pressure, but it's, you know, like, Tata puts a lot of pressure on his guys to play his system and to have faith in him to play his system. And great when that system works, but you know, when you're on the field and it's not working, and great on the field seven, but I was in a lot of practices and a lot of games I was around. I call it
7 minutes in heaven, and I think most Atlanta United fans agree that it was 7 minutes in heaven watching the five stripes.
I think they got their money's worth that day. But anyway, no, Tata puts a lot of pressure on the guys. There's a lot of pressure from the fans. The organization in general wants to do great things, and it's one of those where all they're talking about is how they choked to get the supporter shield. And, that's because they have this expectation that they should have won the supporter shield. And I fully believe they should have won the supporter shield. It's just they get every team's best game because they're, you know, they don't want to get embarrassed, or they go to Mercedes-Benz and they're playing in front of these huge crowds and it brings out the best in them. So don't be surprised if you see David Villa do something, you know, something magical, because he wants to play in front of these huge crowds and do well. And that's what you get every week from every team. And you have to be on top of your game. And so I think Atlanta, it's their title to win. But at the same time, it's their title to lose. And that if they do lose, it's going to be because, you know, they underachieved. They didn't get the job done, but it is good pressure. It's still pressure, though, and you know how people react to pressure. You don't really know until you put them in it. But luckily for them, they've been playing in big games all year. So I like to think that they're able to handle almost just like another game.
I called you an Atlanta United legend twice in this conversation. You no-sold it both times, which I'm assuming means you do believe you are an Atlanta United legend. And I gotta give you props for thinking that about yourself. I like that. That's the confidence that got you this many years in the league.
Listen, Atlanta, coming from DC, where DC loves a loser. Let's be honest. DC loves a loser. Ovechkin kind of threw him off a bit.
Yep.
This past year, because it's just something I can honestly say. I think it's cute. I'll use the word cute. That man dance around and drink and play in fountains, and it was cute. But DC is it'll the urban jungle, man. It'll grind your soul down and make just a bitter, bitter person. And I think that the fans there have kind of come that way. Well, then I go to Atlanta, where everything is unicorns and sunshine, and they've just got this optimism about life in general, and like they've got this owner that's just throwing things, you know, here, you want this, you want Chick-fil-A open on a Sunday. Chick-fil-A's open on a Sunday. I mean, making things that even God can't make happen. And you know, so they've got all this optimism and they've got a really engaging fan base that nothing you can do is wrong. And so it's a lot of fun, and they're very engaging. Like I said, I'm not real happy that they tried to retire me there, but I still have nothing but love for that organization. And I think that they do things the right way. So I want to see organizations that do things the right way get rewarded. And I want to see some of those guys that have been there and their journeymen around this league, Michael Parker, Steph Larenowitz, some of those guys, I want to see them hold the trophy at the end of the year. So that's, you know, I am rooting for Atlanta, but I have friends on every team. And but I definitely enjoy watching them more than most other teams.
Two guys who show up at all the union meetings, correct, Bobby?
They are definitely there. They are definitely there, which, you know, maybe if I go again this year, I can't imagine they're probably trying to get me off of coming to there. But, you know, they love me somewhere deep down inside if they search hard enough.
Sure, sure. Bobby, you have been great with your time, and I appreciate it. We'll check in with you sometime over the offseason to talk about CBA stuff. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Gregory. Thanks for having me on.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.